the inside stories on the teams, suppliers and drivers. This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com.
Hello everybody, this is John Hindorf and we're off on our travels again for another one of our days out. This time we've journeyed to Florida, just outside of Fort Lauderdale off I-95 to the premises of Starworks Motorsport, famed for Grand-Am and Continental Tires and now the WEC as well. And who better to show us round than my old friend, the man at the head of the organisation, the principal and owner of Starworks, Peter Barron.
And straight off the front porch into an open plan office area. What goes on in here, Peter?
All the managers of the respective programs. So we have now the WEC, the Daytona prototype, and the Mustang programs all come here. Then we have separate things for the finance and Fanny's in charge of logistics for everybody. And our overall team manager all work up here. And yeah, we've looked at creating offices and areas, but we decided with so much going on and interaction between everybody, just keep an open layout with desks so everybody can talk to everybody and keep it going that way.
So you don't parcel off the individual programs in separate rooms or offices?
No, I mean, there's too much interaction and experience from other people and the talk and just keep the information flowing. Just, the finance gal, she's in an office where we can lock up all that. But other than that, everything's all good.
Yeah, that's just to keep people going in and hassling about expenses. I know how that works. There's some familiar faces here. I saw Marcus at the desk on the far side. He's been around the block a few times. How many people have you got here and who are they?
Oh, I don't know our head count right now. I would guess full-time people are somewhere, with the WC program and people showing up for that with our car. It's going to be close to 30, 35 people full-time. There's an overall, myself, an overall team manager, program managers for the WEC, Daytona prototype, and Mustang. So all those are separate manager, and then our finance and logistics manager. Then lots of people underneath that.
Very nice, very spacious area here, but I'm guessing that all the work on the vehicles goes on out the back, so how about you take me through and we'll just walk past the finance department and looks like there's a little canteen over there with the guys. This is lunchtime.
The most important acquisitions, we have the high-tech professional line espresso cappuccino maker.
Yeah, good.
Because the instant touch a button frothed milk, none of the it's the way to do it. That keeps you happy.
Can we make sure we get that to the track as well, please?
It goes. We have a separate one with big tower fancy with two cappuccino makers.
That's that. I like someone who gets the priorities right. That's a lot bigger, and you can probably hear, dear listener, just the change in the sound. We got an aircon unit next to us. No, it's all right. But you can hear from the difference in the sound of my voice that we are looking at a very, very large space that can house an awful lot of vehicles in here. Peter, how many square feet do you have?
20,000 square feet, the worksheet. A workshop. It's 50 feet wide by 400 feet long. So it's we always joke if we.
Oh, good. Yes, it's still going down the far end.
We always joke that if we ever need to do a shakedown or anything, we could just do it in the shop here.
You pretty much could. So everything is run out of here. I can see. Let's walk forward a little bit, actually, and we'll have a look at some of the bits and pieces that are here. This is very obviously a Daytona prototype with the engine out, being stripped down, presumably after the Rolex and things like that.
Right. We have, first priority after we came back was catching up on sleep. And then after that, with the addition of the WEC program, we redid the layout of the shop area where we were highlighting the Daytona prototypes up front. Now we had to make room for a WEC program, so we redid the floors and the way the layout is up here. But we got that's all done, so now the next priority is getting the motors out of all the cars, and including the Mustangs that we ran in the Continental Challenge race. That's a little bit of a rude awakening there. We're supposed to be a spec Mustang, somewhat homologated as is that you buy from Ultimatic, and the Roush Mustang that won was nothing close to that. So so now all those four motors have to go out, and there's a massive rush to get all the motors from the weekend up to Roush Yates right now.
I mean, you've taken on a huge amount here in a relatively short space of time. Our listeners will know from our weekend at the Rolex just how much effort has to go in for any 24-hour race. So I'll just have a quick look at this chassis that we've got here. And it has literally, as you might expect, been stripped down to its component parts, to the extent that there's nothing really left on there behind the firewall. Front suspension and brakes are still there, but everything else has been pulled off.
Yeah, the 24-hour race does its toll. We got real lucky that, for the most part, both cars came through unscathed. An axle failure on the 2-car and the 8-car, had a little bit of body damage, but nothing structural. So much of it, when we look at it from a budgeting standpoint, we put in 3 months of labor and work into the 24-hour, getting ready for it, the testing, and then, the post-race, rebuilding the cars and getting it ready. We now have roughly, 7 weeks until our next race with Barber. So these will, the initial things, let's get all the big stuff out of the way with the motors, the cleanup, and get them ready. There's not too much we could do to these cars in between. And obviously there's a lot of focus now on when the WEC car shows up in 2 weeks.
On the DP side of things, a lot of people look at these cars and say they're fairly rudimentary. I mean, I'm looking at one in a state of undress for pretty much the first time and having a look at it. But whatever people say about it, it's a proper racing car, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's a tube frame car. A lot of people, I know there's a lot of purists out there that like the classic carbon prototypes and everything, but people just have to remember that which is your favorite kid, they're all special in their own certain way. But this car, what the Daytona prototype delivers is wheel banging, cars running equal. It's more of a similar thing, and they build it to a performance time spec and try and keep everybody close to that. So it's the cars are simple. It's tube frame. They repair easily. They're a bit archaic, but I think when everybody comments about the Daytona race, that the racing, it's good. We had McNish and Allmendinger swapping paint with a couple hours to go, and that's what Daytona prototype racing is.
Well, I look at this, and it's not so very long ago that I was looking at ACO spec sports cars that didn't look too different from this. Yeah, you're right, they tend to be all carbon fibre now, but you don't have to go too back in history before something not dissimilar to this would have been doing the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to American. You think big V8 tube frame Trans Am cars, all that, and it's a standard American form of racing, I think. And I think where the NASCAR world is that they like the tube frame. That's something they're familiar with. The crash and safety standards with it, and then one thing that was easy for us was the Gen 3 bodywork that the number 8 car ran at Daytona. It was just a new tube frame, which relatively wasn't that expensive. Update that, the bodywork, and go have at it again.
I guess as well, part of the reason that this works so well for you guys is, I can only imagine with the distances that are involved in a series like the Rolex series for the Daytona prototypes, you don't sometimes have the luxury of coming back to base to do your repairs. You've got to be able to get the cars fixed while they're out there on the road and between event schedules.
Yeah, no, the nice thing is with O'Reilly, they have a support truck that has every little bit and piece on the trailer, and you're able to, if you have a big shunt on the road and you tear off some pickup points, you could buy the pickup points, a little bit of grinding, a little bit of welding, and you're on your way. We had Enzo and Alex, who are doing the season with us this year. They teamed up for the first time and did Daytona with us last year, and Alex had a big off, like just a couple hours into the race, and with a carbon prototype car. the thing would have been parked. But, you know, these guys were crushed. They wanted to get out there. And for sure we were out of contention with that car, but we were able to go back, you know, grind off some pickup points, weld it. And the car was running in about 2.5 hours or so. And they still got to enjoy the race. You know, a lot of...
And pickup points for the season as well, of course.
Yeah. Good point there. And it's, you know, a lot of teams might be disgruntled and be like, oh, that's it. We're parked. We're done. But, you know, it is nice that that's an extreme in a race situation, but these are relatively easy to repair.
Ford engine, of course. You mentioned the Gen 3, the big hit, I think, of the Daytona 24 Hours, the new style bodywork and the new size of the greenhouse, if you like, the cockpit area. That's got to be the way forward, hasn't it, for manufacturers to be able to come in on a relatively cost-effective, nothing in racing cheap, notice I didn't use the word cheap there, Peter, but on a relatively cost-effective basis, I'm hearing $700,000 to $900,000 in terms of design and wind testing for manufacturer body shape. Well, that is cost-effective, isn't it?
Yeah, and it keeps manufacturers interested. And then the styling aspect, where a Daytona prototype is, it's a unique beast out there for sure. You know, it's not a silhouette car. It's not a classic prototype. It's somewhere in between. And I think, my son, who's 10, and, you know, he's kind of represents Joe Public out there and, you know, doesn't really think these are the sexiest cars by any means. But then when GM announced the Corvette on track at Daytona at the November 2011 test, and they had it there. They had it on TV on the American show here, Wind Tunnel, with Dave Despain. They had about 10 minutes of it. And my son and I were watching it, and he looked at it and was like, oh, my God, Dad, that car is awesome. That thing is cool as hell. Yeah. And so people relate to that, and then that brings in viewers. You know, there was a lot of attention on GM. We were very happy to be the spoiler and rain on their parade with the pole, and, you know, obviously Ford swept the podium. But right then, Ford and Jamie Allison, all the people at Ford, you know, all their attention, they were there the weekend loving everything, and, you know, I think that gets them excited, and then that helps bring in factory money.
How much can you do on the DP side yourself? That the engines presumably go away. You don't have your own engine shop here.
No need for that. I mean, Roush Yates, they do all the NASCAR engines and Nationwide engines there, and they're experts in that. We're not going to even try to compete with it.
And how close or dissimilar is the DP race engine from something like a NASCAR block and NASCAR heads? Well, you got fuel injection for a start. So.
Yeah. No, I think it's getting a lot different. Where I'm not too up on my NASCAR rules, but, you know, that was the V8 pushrod carb motors, and these are all overhead, you know, fuel injected, you know, cam motors. So it's I think it's a while ago it was very different, but now it's getting closer with the fuel injection in NASCAR. And when I met for the first time with the Roush Yates folks back in 2004, their shop is insanely large. It's somewhere like 1 million or 2 million square feet. Oh, you know, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And, you know, they had, I think, 400,000 feet just for the engine program, and in the corner was about, you know, maybe 7,000 to 10,000 square feet for the Daytona prototype motor. And they said, you know, they don't take it the wrong way, they really didn't care too much about the Daytona prototype racing, but they looked at that as an investment. If NASCAR was ever to go fuel injection or overhead cam, they use that as a rolling test bed, you know. And then, you know, fortunately, they're able to lease out the motors and bring in revenue and everything, but it makes it a business for them. But yeah, I think that's one of the main points, is they like the – it's a more current, up-to-date motor than a NASCAR motor.
We'll move on down the shop. A gap over here where the World Endurance Championship car will go, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Hang on a second. Just walking past what looks to be a piece of modern art. It is, in fact, a rubber pickup. That's come out of, I guess, underneath wheel arches and in intakes from the DP car.
Yeah, no, there's no shortage of tire markings and pickups there. You know, a lot of people, they spray the inside of the bodywork with like Pam nonstick cooking things. To yeah, that's kind of like a, you know.
Does it work?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
We've moved down to a set of four Mustangs. Now, these cars are very recognisably Mustangs, right down to the gaps in the grille where normally the driving lights would be, and the Stallion on the front end. I have to say, Peter, some of them are in slightly better condition, these two that are closest to us, than particularly that one on the far side, and the other one seems like that's not exactly how Ford designed that one on the far side. So a mixed bag for you up at Daytona.
No, that's the Continental Challenge racing. You know there's going to be body contact and cars damaged and everything. And the sad thing was we had one off-road excursion. Wasn't too bad on the number 11 car with a little bit of front bumper and fender damage. And then, you know, after the race, the car that's in its most you know, distressed state over there, it was actually after the checker flag, one of the Roush Mustang cars. The guy's radio wasn't working. We took the checkered flag. Lucas was in the car. And just, you know, the race is over, going through turn one and two at Daytona, and the guy just absolutely drilled Lucas from behind, lifted the car a few feet in the air from behind, pivoted it, and it went in towards the retaining wall head on and just smushed the whole front of the car. And, you know, after that, then we can, his teammate Ryan was in the 22 car, and if you can see, there's some front end damage on that car. Well, after the 51 car hit Lucas, then Ryan in turn went and smushed in the 51.
I see.
But, well, the thing we know going into it, that there's a 2013 body kit update for these cars after the next race, so everybody's getting new bumpers and
yeah, that's not the way to justify that, but I hear what you're doing. I think 82 cars started that Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge race at Daytona. I mean, that's remarkable in itself, isn't it? And again, these are cars, and I can see from the damage you're talking about here, this
how bad it was.
Yeah, I'm sorry to make you look at it, Peter, but there's not a lot's going to be saved from the front clip. I'm afraid's gone. The both front wings, the inner wings, I think the strut tops and the suspension mounts.
They've moved for sure.
Yeah, sure. So that's going to go. But I mean, these are what we would recognise in the UK as a GT or a touring car style of. That's the monocoque with a hefty steel roll cage inside. And I mean, these are absolutely based on production cars.
Yeah, they run with a couple little tweaks and modification. You could essentially run this in a FIA GT4 class. So that's basically what it is.
And providing, as I say, with 82 cars starting at Daytona, a phenomenal entertainment value. Now, clearly, that was at Daytona, the biggest race of the year. But the Continental Sports Car Challenge has been growing over the last few years. And what? How many? Roughly speaking, how many competitors do you think you'll be having through the season, Peter?
I think they're pretty much all full season competitors. It really won't drop down too much.
So will they split out the GS and the other cars?
They don't. The plan is to keep it up. Yeah, we go to Barber, and yeah, that's a small, twisty, tight 17 turns in 2.2 miles or something like that. And, you know, when you look at yellows and fuel consumption, you know, it's a 2.5-hour race. And you know, heck, it's the biggest gamble is going to be when do you make your final pit stop. You could probably make it with 2 hours to go under all the yellows. But the thing that all the guys say about the Continental racing is it's so fun. You know, there's so many cars up there. There's always somebody to race against. You could go from 5th to 15th in one turn if something goes wrong. And it's you know, a lot of fun. And, you know, the nice thing is this was a big shunt here in the 02 car. You know, really, the driver came out just fine. Yeah, it's a hit and it's bad, but at the end of the day, you know, it's a street production frame. It's not that extensive. And
well, and I'm looking at the front door on the driver's side. It's got a ding in it, but I'm guessing that front door probably opened, and there's no egress at all into anything inside the car. Not even in the footwell or the passenger footwell area has had a hit at all. So that's a hefty steel roll cage in there, and that's done its job, and the car, as you say, with a little bit of TLC, will be back out again, presumably at Barber. We talk about the DPs and the Conti Tires series. We know that we all like to go racing and enjoy ourselves, and you say how much fun it is, But this is a business as well. How does the business model stack up for something like the Continental Tyres or indeed the DPs against, you know, things that you've raced with in the past when you were a driver before even you were owning your own team?
Wow, it's really amazing how racing budgets have escalated. And you hear...
A slight frown on his face when he says that, dear listener.
It's painful. Like, I remember when I was at the driver's meeting pre-race before the start of the 24 of Daytona in 2002, where they announced the DP class. And back then, the tagline they had was, we're going to bring you prototype racing for the cost of GT racing. Mm-hmm. And back then, we did a full season of, either Grand Am or ALMS, and it was about $750,000 back then. And I remember the first year of DP budgets were around $1 million, $1.25 million was pretty reasonable back then. If you talk to like a Ganassi and a SunTrust and a Gainsco, they're all north of $3 million now. Yeah, like there's words going out that like the some of the Continental teams are spending north of $1 million up to $1.5 million on a car.
One car,
yeah. And, some GT teams are getting close to $2 million per car right now.
And the Rolex, yeah.
Yeah, so it's some high dollar. You know, there's a lot of races out there. And, one of the biggest differences is there's 13 DP races on the calendar this year. When you look at, the ALMS series, I can't remember last year, there was like 8 or 9 or so, but... Yeah.
Ten this year.
But I'm just like looking at last year's numbers. And, that does make a huge difference in how you hire people and bring them on when there's like a huge space in between, like an April Long Beach race versus going to Lime Rock in July for the Le Mans break there. And you maybe take on, I know the Flying Lizards use more of a fly-in model and, less full-time people were here. Because of damage like this and the turnaround and 13 race weekends and some of them, like in August, we have like 6 races in 8 weeks or something like that. We have to have full-time people. So that's one of the biggest differences there.
Let's continue through because we're barely halfway down this 400 feet. You could certainly run a drag school in here. get off the line. We're into sort of bid off areas here. I recognize this is something with some milling machines and stuff like that. So a machine shop in terms of what you can do here, Peter. What sort of stuff do you manufacture right in here?
With the tube frame and everything on the Daytona prototype being a metal-based car, there is a lot of metalworking that we can do to it, and even down to fabricating some suspension pieces and even make our own pickup points, things like that. But it's just so much extra work that needs to be done to the cars, making brackets and you name it. So we pretty much have everything you need to hear, all the classic lathe mill, big band saws and everything, a couple different welders. But it's pretty straightforward. We don't do a lot of high-tech CNC work. We would just, assign that work out to another, third party or something like that.
Across the other side of the building, and it's literally just a few steps across, the other side of things is carbon fiber. And this really is almost the two different sides of how to go racing, isn't it? With the metalwork on one side and the carbon fiber on the other. Now, you don't have an autoclave here because obviously that would be a huge investment. But again, small pieces, crash damage parts on this side of things?
Yeah, with the Daytona prototype, there's so much hitting and smacking that goes on and just stuffing a nose into someone's rear bumper. And it's just rough racing. That's what it is. And all the little things like a nose on the new Riley, I think, is right around $18,000 or $19,000, and you just to take it and send it somewhere to get it fixed is just atrocious on the cost of shipping and time. So we have a crazy good carbon guy and a couple other people that help out in times of need. But then we've made molds for all the simple parts and the corners and the fenders that we could do all our own repairs here. And then there's all sorts of our carbon guy. Lauren was worth with Champion Audi, and he knows what to do.
Manny was busy down there at times with some of the guys that they had driving for them. I remember that very well. And I remember him out the back of the pits at Le Mans, working pretty much full-time the whole week.
Yeah, but like the engineers who say, hey, what about a piece like this? And you know, LG is nickname, you know, he gets it. And some of the stuff the guy turns out, it's very simple what we have here, but basic wet layup vacuum bagging and simple molds. And the guy does incredible work. I mean, the stuff he does, you know, without an autoclave rivals people in an autoclave. The guy's awesome.
Great stuff. Now, as we move on back, we're almost in the back half of the building now, and as you might expect, running several different programs, there has to be an element of storage, and I can see various rear-end clips and bits of bodywork in some in pristine, some not quite it's a good condition. Of course, you have the hot dog stands as well for the pit work. These are all very very high-tech and very much required nowadays, particularly in the endurance side of things.
Yeah, almost everybody buys them from SeaTech in Wisconsin, you know, central, you know, northern U.S. now, and they're just a factory that I think a lot of this stemmed from sports car racing, where people got these cabinets, you know, the Pratt perches over here, and they've just gone ballistic now with how big they are. And, you know, I think our last one that we just got was about $55,000, and it's got a second floor to it, and
massage parlor, yeah. Sauna downstairs, hot tub built on as well. Yeah. This is a big one here. And these break down, presumably, Peter, for transport. Well, hang on a second. That's got ruched seating, and that's absolutely glorious. This is taking it very seriously indeed, isn't it?
We're getting an air conditioner for this one, actually. You have to. This is big. But, you know, there's some, like, four monitors that hang out underneath it here, behind it, the workstation. You know, guests and people or drivers can hang out up there. And
is this the American equivalent of the explosion in paddock motorhomes in Formula One, that everybody's trying to outdo each other?
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden the NASCAR people started making all these, and that's carried over from sports car racing, where you see all the guys sit up top with all their guests and everything. But it is a part of the show and keeping up with everybody, and if so-and-so has it, then we have to have it.
Yeah, I mean, that's another good point, isn't it? Because so much of what we see in motor racing as we continue back, we're nowhere near. We're still another 50, 60 feet off the back of the building here, moving into another area, and you'll hear the audio change as well. But so much in motor racing is perception as well as reality, Peter. And to attract the sponsors or the drivers who have the money, and you know, let's not make any bones about that, you're not doing this for charity, it's got to stack up, so you've got to look right as well as perform right.
Yeah, we've gotten pretty lucky here. You know, in 2009 in the fall when we started off, it was, you know, basically it was me and one other employee, and we took whatever program we could get to make it work. And you have to, you know, manage your coppers and everything to find out, you know, what are we going to spend on, and there are things we did, like, didn't really worry too much about what the cars looked like, you know, the quality. Like, we tend to wrap cars over here versus paint them, just because there's the repairs, and you could tend to it quickly at the track, and you don't have to take it to a paint booth. You could just do a carbon work, put some refinished wrap on it, and go. But really, the state of the cars and clothing and, you know, our pit equipment maybe wasn't the freshest, nicest, but we had success on track. We took whatever money we had and we put it into the car and the engineering and the people. And then the results came. You know, we had some strong successes in the 2010 and 11 season, and the group that we were with last year with Enzo Podolicchio and Alex Popov, it really helped us step up this year. And they put forth a little bit better budget, where they saw that we had what we needed on the mechanical side of the car. And now it's not that much more to make it all look good. And they were able to help us with sponsorship to get us looking good. And then you have to, now that we have all that going and to get more sponsors, the better you look, the better the sponsors will come to you.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, more storage here. Looks like a DP. Yeah, a couple of tubs there, just in case something goes horribly wrong.
That one, I think that one was the 8 car that basically, with the part of the update, the top half of it was cut off and redone. And then this is just a fresh tub sitting here of the Gen 2 bodywork style.
Right. Okay. Lots of pit bikes, scooters, tires, wheels.
You skipped over the Zamboni floor cleaner. That's pretty imperative.
I'm impressed with that. That's very good to keep the... We're in an area now that the floor isn't painted. I should have said that the whole of the, 100 metres or so that I've just walked through was all painted in lovely McLaren grey, the same colour that I used to have my garage in the old place. I need to get mine done yet in the new place. Now, I'm seeing go-kart frames up there and off-road go-kart frames and all kinds. What's going on up there, Peter?
Yeah, no, how this all started was in the end of 2009 when we didn't have a program and didn't have anywhere to go. I had a friend who, in this building that we're in, it's part of the whole building itself is I think maybe 400,000 or 500,000 square feet, and about 80,000 square feet of it is an indoor go-karting facility. And we worked out a little bit of arrangement where, the first year they gave us free rent here, and they kept some of their extra go-karts and extra items. And they also have a digital billboard company associated with them, so that's what some of those pallets wrapped up over there are. But as the years have gone and our rent has increased, and they're ability to store stuff in here has decreased, so we just have a few, just being considerate, letting have a couple things back here.
How cool is it having an indoor go-kart track for when you want to, lose a bit of that next door to you? You can just pop next door and lose a bit of that frustration coming back after a bad race weekend.
Yeah, no, it's pretty funny. With the weekend we had, they had at Daytona, it's one of those, we're almost in tears over it still about being that close, but it's still a great accomplishment. And they had a big party for us over there and invited like 300 or 400 people over. So it was fun. Yeah. All the crews out there go-karting and
yeah, but come on, Peter, if I'd offered you second place and battling for the lead when you were doing that engine change on the 8 car just before qualifying, you'd have taken that right then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. You'd take it for sure.
No, I'm with Peter Barron, in case you haven't worked out. We're at Starworks in Florida, just around the Fort Lauderdale area, and we've walked pretty much right the way through the whole of this very, very impressive 400 foot long facility out towards the back, the ubiquitous loading dock out here, and just as much a part of anything that goes on with the racing team as we head outside into the warm Florida day, around about 25-26 degrees Celsius at the moment, and just as much a part of any race team nowadays as what goes on inside the shop is how you get the shop to the track, of course. And America is not short of impressive trucks and trailers, and you've got one backed up here. One of how many now that you have in terms of rig sets?
Yeah, we're up to 5 sets now, where we have one is just an open rear where we can put the 4 Mustangs, more of a just generic hauler, but all done up nicely. Then the other 4 are full blown with 2 with engineering offices up front, 2 with driver lounge areas up front. All of them have the full assortment of a list of cabinets and workbenches, a couple shock dynos, and the whole lot assortment of everything.
We touched on the amount of distance that you travel here. You're in the southern part of the continental United States. The Continental Tires and the Grand Am, the Rolex season, takes you length and breadth of the country. I mean, how many miles are these trucks, roughly speaking, clocking up? And how often can you get back to base?
It's about 30,000 miles a year is roughly what we do, which it sounds bad, but it's not that bad for us. I know in 2006, we were still based in Florida with a different team here, and we had 3 separate trips to California, and that starts to take the life out of you. So each trip to California is about 3,000 to 3,500 miles, depending on southern or northern California. So when you do 3 of those a year, it gets bad. But answering the question too, where this year they have a lot of the series is staged every 2 weeks, so versus staying on the road and coming back, we'll tend to, hightail it back to the shop and unload here and work. The nice thing about the Grand Am schedule now is so much of it is East Coast based, and, we could get from down here, even though it is southern Florida. It's kind of funny. When you're leaving the state, you just can't believe how big it is, and it's about 400 miles before you actually exit Florida. But all the tracks, Road America, Watkins Glen, Mid-Ohio, that are in the northern part, they're only about a day and a half away by travel, so that's not that bad.
And what do? You have a couple of guys on each truck, so the truck can pretty much drive straight through.
Yeah, pretty much. And then the flip side is, too, where a lot of them are Saturday races, so they'll leave on a Saturday night. Sunday they'll drive. Monday morning they're back, and sometimes you don't even have to try that hard to get back.
Yeah, great stuff. We'll just finish off back inside again as we walk back in, because what we haven't talked about was the space at the front end of the shop there, Peter, which is a new departure for yourselves. And just a quick thought about the World Endurance Championship. Well kept secret, well done, because normally those things do somehow get out. Why now for you, and why is it the right time for Starworks to go into, to go back, for your point of view, back to ACO style racing, and why with a P2 car particularly?
It's funny, it's goosebumps, right?
And he has really.
We were really working on this Gen 3 bodywork, and we were looking at different manufacturers.
For the Daytona prototype.
Yeah, and we were talking to Dallara, and they were really working on a body kit for us to do something with Ford. And it was, some of our cars were getting a bit older with the Daytona prototypes. So we were looking at this number of perhaps buying 3 new cars for this upcoming season, and Dallara included a €1 million development charge on there. So we were talking, holy cow, €3 million for 3 cars. And I threw out there, that's about the price of going WEC racing. And it started off as a little bit of a joke, and that was in early December. And, from there on out, it just became, well, let's look into it. And then when you look at the P2 car, we have the thing that made that so exciting was we have the driver classifications, and a silver with 2 platinums. And Enzo is a fantastic silver driver. Mm. I don't think we could ask for anything better there. And, it's, you could go out and do all the races with equal caliber drivers, and there's no way we could compete on a P1 type championship, but this with the driver ranking is a big thing. Then when you look at the P2 cars and the cost cap on it, and the Honda with the dollar euro conversion is was like $465,000, which equates right now about $100,000 less than a Daytona prototype. And it's a full carbon tub, carbon brakes. It comes with laser ride height sensors, and it's a fabulous car. And you look at how sexy that car is, and the races. We looked at Enzo, had the ability to go to his sponsors. Here's what we want to do. We're going to go to that fabulous word Le Mans, and it's. The budgets were right. Everything was right. They haven't gone crazy with what a full season budget is over there yet. And it just became, all right, we have to figure out how we can get this done.
Well, there's no crossover at all with what you're doing now. So it is a big investment. Is there an element of taking a risk with this? Or do you feel confident that you're in the right place as far as your organization and logistics is concerned? Because let's be honest, driving 30,000 miles in the States is one thing. Crossing the globe is something else. Are you in the right place to compete and compete at the front of the field? Because I know that that's where you want to be.
Yeah. No, the one thing that we did, and I'm a very strong person of, is making sure that the people are all the right people in place. Our team manager, Simon Morley, who's in charge of all the programs, he's ex-Benetton crew chief, worked with Schumacher, and is used to the whole operations in F1 and how the whole show goes on the road. And then he went over to work with Stewart GP, where he was one of the original founding people there that helped put that whole show together. The the WEC program manager we have is Brian Colangelo and his wife Fanny, who's actually from the town of Lamont. She was born and raised there. And they just did the season with Crone. And you know, he's worked with us in the past, and they know the whole ins and outs of how the whole series works, the shipping, the people, the hotels you get, and the whole infrastructure behind it. They have that covered. Our engineering standpoint, we have Steve Chalice is with us. He was with us for a few years in the past, and then as part of a breakup of another team, he went to go work for 2 years away from us, but is back this year. And he's the type of engineer. Yeah, his strength is the more complicated and complex a car is, the better his engineering and differences are. If you give everybody more of a spec car, for sure the guy's great. But as soon as you start adding in, you know, third shocks and extra dampers and all these crazy things that these cars have, that yeah, he's really going to shine with that. And the nice thing is for us on the WEC, we're the only, you know, Acura / Honda car out there, and we get all the support from Honda. You know, we have
in P2 though.
Yeah, and yeah, they have the Worth facility where the cars are made over in England. We already have trips scheduled over there to go on their simulator, and it's not only just a driver simulator, it's an engineering simulator. So, you know, Steve and our other, you know, engineers are going over there. So we'll be doing tests for Sebring, you know, with the drivers getting acquainted to the car and also making engineering changes and working on it. So I think our people, you know, it's, you know, I respect all the people and everything that's been going on there, and I've followed the series, you know, the last year, and, you know, P2 has always been a sexy series for sure. And but yeah, I really think we have the people in place to go out there and be at the top.
Now, as we're standing here on our factory visit at Starworks, I'm going to finish off with a question about another facility a long, long way away, because you're talking about having a base in Europe, and you've picked Cardiff in South Wales, I hear. Now, why? I'm saying, by the way, I lived in Cardiff, so I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Great city, but it's not exactly in the carbon fibre triangle. Why have you, I mean, if you'd been around Silverstone or Huntingdon or around where we live in Thrapston, I could see it, but why Cardiff? You're a Doctor Who fan, are you?
No, Shadwell, right? we actually have you know, 2.5 Welsh people on our team. So our crew chief on the car is from Cardiff, and he already has a shop there, full blown, you know, machine shop facility. And as part of that, he has a company that a lot of F1 teams have subcontracted work out to him to build a lot of their pit equipment and metalwork. You know, so it's, everything is there. Sure, it's not right, you know, in the heart of the Silverstone area, but for us, it's, you know, the difference in travel versus a known quantity and having it in place, and we don't want to spend a lot of time. Where should we be? We just, hey, Ian, your shop. Can we use it? Yeah, absolutely. And so that's what makes this feasible.
You've only been here a couple of years at Starworks, as you said. Where will you be in 5 years' time? Not necessarily in premises, but what do you want Starworks Motorsport to stand for, Peter?
Oh, you know, the thing that you look at some of these teams over the years and their ability to compete in the top of whatever series that they compete in. And, you know, when, you know, Starworks goes to whatever class it's going to be racing in, if it's, you know, DP is a great place to compete in, and you're up against, you know, the Ganassis of the world, and Penske's been in there for American racing. You know, that's the as big names as you get, and it's nice competing with them. And on the international series, you know, continued with that. If we were able to work up to a P1 program or more association with a manufacturer and get some support from them on, you know, like a factory run program, is always the dream. But then, you know, over here, we might even dabble a little bit into nationwide racing this upcoming year. We're looking to do some of the road races. So, you know, basically, it comes down to when the economy is starting to go and start clicking like what it is, we have to expand and take what we can get and make the most of it. And then when the economy tightens up, then you just, okay, go back to your core basic, what you can do strongly and efficiently.
I've known you long enough to know that you never do anything half-heartedly. You put your heart and soul into everything. You've clearly done that with this facility. Thanks for having us here. And Peter, best of luck in the future.
Thanks so much. That was great having you guys here.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com.